Hey there, Wedding Pro. Are you using AI to its fullest potential in your business yet? Or have you been experimenting with ChatGPT with mixed results? I get it, and I figured out the hacks to get AI to help wedding pros elevate your brand, streamline your content creation, and more. And we're sharing it in our AI-powered Brand Voice Mastery for Wedding Pros guide, located in the Planner's Vault shop. This guide is filled with prompts, insights, and expert guidance on how to use AI quickly, powerfully, and accurately for your business needs. Whether you want to inject more personality into your copy or create more engaging social media content or communicate your unique value proposition more effectively, this guide is your key to unlocking the full potential of AI in your business journey. Grab your copy now at theplannersvault.com/shop. Or click the link in the show notes. Okay, friends, let's start the show. What makes an amazing wedding experience for our clients and their guests? Is it the design elements that make them stop in their tracks when they see the space, plus the small little details that start multiple conversations throughout the evening? Or is it the logistics of making sure every vendor is on the same page and the wedding runs smoothly without any confusion or time that seems to drag on? Well, as we all know, a truly memorable event has both precise logistics and beautiful design elements, but it can be a challenge to marry those two. So on episode 182 of the Weddings for Real podcast, we're talking all about how all wedding pros can strike the balance of aesthetics and logistics to create the best experience for their clients. Hey there, I'm Megan Gilligan, and this podcast is for fellow wedding pros that know what it really takes to thrive as a professional in the wedding industry. Because it's not what they show you in the movies. Spoiler alert, it takes more than a wave of a wand or the toss of confetti to take someone's special day from big idea to big success. This podcast is a wedding professional safe space to laugh and dish about the glitz, the not so glam, and all things weddings, for real. My guest today is Becca Atchison, founding partner and creative director at Rebecca Rose Events. You may remember Becca from way back on episode 29, where she gave us the case for percentage-based pricing. That was a fantastic episode and truly changed the model of my own wedding planning business. Today, she comes on to talk about how all wedding pros can collaborate to combine both design and the coordination.
A great wedding is one that balances logistics and aesthetics. And that balance that we're talking about needs to be cohesive, it needs to be authentic, and it needs to be effortless. Or rather, maybe I should say it needs to appear effortless. Anyone listening to this podcast knows there is a mind-blowing, extraordinary amount of effort in the mix behind the scenes. But that sense of effortlessness is really the thing that makes our work so invaluable to our clients, right? So that they and their families and their guests can just show up to be hosted, to be cared for, to be thrilled, celebrated, and just live a few hours without a care in the world except to be surrounded and consumed by complete and utter joy.
Surrounded and consumed by complete and utter joy. I love it. But it takes a lot of work to get to the point where everything looks easy and effortless. Let's find out how to get there.
I'm referencing an intentional event design that delivers a full sensory experience to our clients and their guests. So that means there's no detail that is either too big or too small to matter. And I wholeheartedly believe that it's true for all wedding professionals, not just people like me or you, Megan, not just other planners or designers. When our clients hire any of us to produce and execute their wedding, whether we're planning it, photographing it, entertaining at it, styling hair and makeup, serving food, mixing cocktails, lighting a stage, setting tables, loading furniture off a truck, driving shuttles, you name it. They are ultimately entrusting us with their guest experience. And that is really a pretty enormous responsibility that we're given. So when I talk about the balance of aesthetics and logistics, I'm saying that we need to truly put ourselves in our clients' and our guests' shoes. We need to know what they need. We need to know what they're going to notice. We need to think about what they're going to see, hear, touch, taste, smell. What will they want? How can we make them comfortable before they ever have to ask or want for anything? And that's the level of attention to detail I'm talking about. And it matters equally for how we approach the wedding logistically and aesthetically.
Mm-hmm. And finding, I mean, I love the way that you described what that experience should feel like for both our clients and their guests. And I think this episode is timely because before we hit record, you and I were talking about like, we're still, as an industry, we're still feeling the effects of a pandemic shutdown to the wedding boom and to everything that goes along with that. So being able as a wedding professional to pause and put some perspective and some additional thought, it can feel, it can feel a touch overwhelming with everything that's on our plate, but the importance of it is really, really huge.
Yeah, I think the importance is huge, and perhaps it's more important than ever, than it ever has been to our clients. So we owe it to them, and we owe it ultimately to ourselves and to the long-term longevity and health of our business to bring that focus back to the forefront and not lose sight of it in all of the overwhelm that we feel.
Yeah, that's true. So when you talk about it being something that is not just for planners or designers, how do other wedding professionals that aren't in those roles contribute to that balance? Or how do they, I don't know if we want to go the other direction as well, but how do, how do we work as a team to provide an even better experience overall for our clients?
Yeah, I think it just boils down to kind of the simple fact that it's got to matter to all of us. No wedding professional is an island. We all depend on each other to produce exceptional event experiences. And while I think, you know, it can be really easy to sort of fall into the trap and think, you know, I'm the photographer, I'm just responsible for delivering a beautiful gallery, or I'm the pastry chef, I'm responsible for desserts and the way they look and taste. But here's the thing, and it's really very simple. If event design matters to the client, that means it has to matter to all of us. Aesthetics is not just about something looking pretty, like we talked about before. It's a full sensory experience that matters. And there is not a single vendor on a wedding job site that does not contribute actively to that sensory experience, whether they enable it, enhance it, or hinder it. So as wedding professionals, you know, who desire, hopefully we all desire to serve our clients as best we possibly can, it's easy for us all to become just so hyper-focused on doing our own thing exceptionally well that we develop tunnel vision and we forget, or perhaps we underestimate, the roles that all of our colleagues, the other vendors that we work with, you know, the roles that they have to play in the same exact project for the same exact goal. And that forgetfulness or neglect can seem benign. In fact, I think we're even guilty as an industry of sort of teaching ourselves to stay in our own lane, but it has consequences. And so we focus on staying in our own lane, but we forget that there are so many other lanes that at some point on the wedding day, if not earlier in the week, have to merge into the same lane. And so it all comes back and boils back to, this has to matter to all of us. And that's why this topic is not just about the work that planners do or designers do. It's about how we're all together on that, again, the lane that merges, knowing that the reason that we even have event design to talk about as an industry is because it is important to our clients who hire and employ every single one of us.
And then here's a question for you. It's kind of a two-part question, but part one would be, the planner or the designer that is leading, bringing this event to life, does it fall on us to be really clear in the vision and the expectations and the sourcing of who we bring into this team for the client? Like, that has to be done really, really well, I think, as the foundation for the success of the event. For those that are in the roles of the DJ, the photographer, the lighting, what is their job? Is it to ask better questions? Is it to lean further into the collaboration in certain ways that you can share with us?
Yeah. I think collaboration is the key, right? And that sort of as a concept, collaboration will get you everywhere or nowhere fast. And so to collaborate well, you have to, of course, communicate well, nurture a relationship, and just go above and beyond to demonstrate that you recognize and respect the role and responsibility held by the other person or team you're collaborating with every bit as much as your own. I do think a lot of this falls on us and on our shoulders as planners, because we're often responsible for assembling and building the team. Although that's not always the case. It depends on the wedding. It depends on the client. It depends on the level of service. There are certainly many times where a client is assembling the team on their own, and then different vendors, planners included, sort of find themselves on this team and then have to navigate it. So that's why if you kind of focus on being an excellent collaborator, it serves you well, you know, sort of no matter how that came about. And so, it, you know, no matter what any of us do in the wedding industry, successful collaborations require us to put forth the effort to understand the needs of our colleagues, you know, the needs that our vendor colleagues have, so that we can best support them and they can best support us. And I can think of so many examples of collaboration, you know, maybe at just one wedding, that have then led to years of trust and consistent partnership and mutually beneficial business relationships. But I can also think of examples of collaboration approached so poorly that, you know, we never want to recommend or work with that vendor again. And in the safety of this audience and this podcast, you know, I'll share a couple quick examples, of course, without naming any names, but, you know, not long ago, we produced a destination wedding that was more than 2 years in the making, as many of our pandemic era weddings, you know, were. The band arrived and began to set up an extraordinary amount of large metal trusses. And, you know, that might not have been so odd in a convention center or like a corporate setting, but it looked downright out of place and weird under a sailcloth tent in a garden surrounded by hydrangea bushes and elegant dinner tables. And so most importantly, nobody said word one about this setup to us in advance of the wedding day. And so I asked the sound crew and the guys who were there early setting up this truss if they could, you know, if we could discuss adjusting or removing it and explained why. But they kind of just shrugged me off, probably in one of the rudest manners I've ever experienced. And, you know, you see, to them, I was just sort of some wedding coordinator. They didn't even know my name. They had no idea how many hundreds of hours had gone into designing every exacting detail of this day and this tent. And it was clear to me in that moment that they really didn't care. And so they were there to do one job, again, their lane only, didn't care who was merging in, regardless of who the client was, what the client cared about, or what anybody else had to say about it. And so that truss, of course, was there to support an extensive array of lights. And as the sun set, the stage and the dance floor and the ceiling of the sailcloth tent all turned purple. And the band logo, kid you not, band logo was projected as a gobo onto the tent ceiling and then like circulating around the ceiling for the duration of the reception. It was awful. And so, you know, not only is this an example of very poor, I would argue practically non-existent collaboration, but it illustrates what I mean by disruption to the balance of logistics and aesthetics. Logistically speaking, we needed a band to provide entertainment and facilitate the flow of the evening and keep the guests entertained and dancing. But aesthetically speaking, this band focused so much on their own thing and what they're used to doing over and over and over again, that when our lanes merged, they were completely unprepared and unwilling to consider that their actions physically damaged countless hours of work and an intentional design plan with decisions made by our mutual clients about the design of the event. And, you know, shame on us too, for assuming that that band would know our needs. And so it's, you know, looking at this example, it's because of the horrible lighting that our design suffered. It's because of the horrible attitude and lack of acknowledgement that we're producing a client experience together that we'll never choose to collaborate with that band ever again. And it's not just, you know, it's certainly, I feel like bands get a bad rap. And so I almost hesitate to use that example, but there are so many examples of missteps by planners, missteps by anyone.
All categories. And, yeah.
Exactly. And just, you know, boiling down to did you consider who's on the other end of that interaction when you're working on a project together? What does it mean for the end result? And what does it mean for the longevity of your relationship?
Yeah, you can think of collaboration on certain events where that's led to years of future collaborations. And then you just shared an example of an alternate experience. And I was thinking back on my own career and the weddings that we've done. And I thought like, okay, yes, I feel that too, as Becca is saying that. And what are the qualities that, like, what words come to mind for me when a collaboration has failed? Like what comes up there? And I wrote down, it aligns perfectly with what you said, but rigidity. Is that a word? Rigidity?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty sure
it is now.
Rigidity. And it is that idea of like, I'm doing my thing. This is my process. I'm inflexible to whatever you want. That to me is a quality number one that will make me realize that there will be no future collaborations. And lack of professionalism for me is another one. And then finally, like lack of awareness or empathy for the situation as a whole, the clients, the other professionals. Yeah, those things all. I love the way you painted that picture of how the logistics and the design, the true importance of collaboration to bring to life what the client deserves, right?
Yeah. And I mean, here's another quick example that, you know, I'll pick on us planners for a minute. I think this happens a lot, but this was pretty recent. We learned from a venue that a very well-known high-end planner, I don't know who it was, they didn't tell me, I didn't ask, and I'm certainly not, wouldn't share it here, even if I did, but you know, I just know that it was someone who is considered to be at the top of the industry, had produced a wedding the week before us. And the week before we were there, and while it looked beautiful, it was apparently a logistical nightmare for the venue team and the kitchen staff. And so a quick bit of background on that, you know, I think this is a fascinating thing to consider. Hopefully planners and designers know this, or it's something that you learned today if you didn't, but something to be aware of if, again, you're not a planner, designer, or a catering team member, and you just to have situational awareness of what's involved in the design and logistics process. If you are layering a tabletop to include a dinner plate on a charger, perhaps, so that the place settings have more depth to them and more visual and textural interest, you need to rent or supply a full extra set of dinner plates. So let's say there's 150 people at this wedding. You need 150 dinner plates. Actually, you need some extras, so bump that number up, but let's call it 150 to be easy. You need 150 dinner plates in the back of the house that the kitchen team has, that they're, you know, they're stacked and ready for plate up when it's time to physically compose every dinner plate before it then gets paraded out to be served at the table. But then you also need another 150 dinner plates that you're using as the design element for that table setting.
Yeah.
And so this planner, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt, I'm guessing maybe she didn't know that, but she became really upset with the staff when they explained that they were not going to be able to serve food on the dinner plates that were already sitting out on the tables as a design element.
Well, how would that happen? How would that happen?
I don't know. But you know, if you think about it, it's logistically impossible to do that in a way that is remotely efficient so that the food quality or temperature doesn't suffer. I mean, you're talking, you know, this is a venue where, you know, that plate of food is several hundred dollars. That is not a fair ask to expect that caterer to send out a cold plate of food that is that valuable or anywhere. I don't care if we're talking about chicken and mashed potatoes. The caterer gets to put their best foot forward.
Yes.
And if the design element was not, you know, created or executed in a way that enables that logistical collaboration, that's a point of failure. You know, and not to mention how highly gross and unsanitary it is to take a plate that one person sat in front of when they sat down at the table and probably touched or breathed on or put their Kleenex on. And then take it back to the kitchen to put another person's dinner on it and then serve it to someone else.
Yeah.
So it's just a good example of why it's important to discuss the design details across industry disciplines and not make assumptions. Yes. You know, a planner or designer needs to know that there are countless unseen pairs of hands in that kitchen handling things and understand what happens behind the scenes to understand why a certain design decision may or may not work and be able to guide their client accordingly, or maybe recalibrate that for better execution. And again, this is, it comes back to the aesthetics have to be balanced with the logistics, and we all share equally in that responsibility. And then bringing this full circle, that planner is not really likely to be recommended or appreciated by that venue in the future. Mm-hmm. And that is an entirely preventable shame.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really on all of us.
That story is a really great example of just how important it is to communicate your expectations and everything that is in your head mm-hmm. that you think someone else may have an understanding of how things should go, like communicating mm-hmm. expectations, asking questions, seeking clarity from both sides.
Yeah.
And when we get so busy, when we're drowning in work, in the wedding boom, mm-hmm. and there's so much on our plate, that's when things start to fall through the cracks. And, mm-hmm. you know, it may seem small, but in the grand scheme of your business, like being removed from a preferred list at a venue is a pretty huge ramification.
Right, exactly. And, you know, when we're all busy in 2022, we don't notice the damage mm-hmm. of being removed from a vendor, from a venue list. Mm-hmm. But 2 or 3 years from now, that's going to hurt really bad. And that is a hard damage to undo. Mm-hmm. Not to mention that in that interim, how many new businesses have popped up to compete with yours Ooh. In that amount of time? And how many new relationships have formed with that venue or that vendor that now you have to wade through all of those relationships to even get a seat at the table to say hi again. Mm. And so it really is all wrapped up in thinking about not only the way that you serve your clients with integrity and the way that you treat the people you depend on and you work with in this industry with integrity, but really, it's just very bad business mm-hmm. to be short-sighted in how you collaborate with folks. It really comes back to hurt you in the long run if you don't yes. do it well.
Yes. And if you're listening to this and you are feeling the weight of 2022 with the quantity of what is on your books, I would love to advise that this would be one of those moments of like, oh gosh, okay, I'm starting to see even further. Like this means that I either need to evaluate the client load that I'm carrying and, or I need to bring on additional support on my team so that I can breathe and provide the level of service that I know my company should be known for. And I want to continue to be known for. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think too, it's like when we're talking about these examples and how the damn it, you know, we're not going to recommend that band again, that venue isn't going to recommend that planner again. I don't want to say it's easy. But it is that simple to just think about truly, did you show up to do your best work and make room for everyone else to do their best work? That's really what this boils down to. And that's how you distinguish yourself and set yourself apart from the throngs of folks in our industry who don't ever do that. And so, you know, thinking about when it made me think of this, when Megan, when you were talking about kind of, it might be time to consider the volume that you have, you know, that's something that we grapple with. We typically don't do more than 8 weddings a year, sometimes less. And so what that means is we might have great relationships with venues, but realistically, we're not working at them every year. So how do we maintain that relationship? Again, when we know that week in and week out, there are other planners there. And that's the thing. We just have to have delivered such an incredible working experience that one time that the next time the opportunity comes back around, even if it's 3 to 4 years later, mm-hmm. that experience is so grounded in positive memory that those 3 or 4 years evaporate and it doesn't matter. So that's how important it is.
Yes. So huge. Okay. I know that you have a really interesting story that you're going to share a little behind the scenes of something that you just recently witnessed firsthand. Would you be willing to share that story now?
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about this. So Betsy, my business partner, and I traveled to Miami at the invitation of Pablo and Eleanor at the Nuage Designs team. And so we got to spend a couple of days there. And we were given a, I love this, they called it a behind the seams instead of behind the scenes. I thought that was incredibly clever.
Amazing.
So we had this behind the scenes experience that was just so eye-opening, and I'm excited to sort of share that insight with anyone listening to this. So Nuage has been a very trusted partner of ours for many years. We've talked about this so much, but the reason they're a trusted partner is that they take the time to understand what's important to us, because they know if it's important to us, it's because it's important to our clients. So if you're, think for a minute, you know, if you're a planner or designer, or maybe you're a venue host or a caterer or a server, but even if you're not any of those things, if you're a vendor who has ever taken notice of table linens or napkins being set up, maybe it's on a dinner table, maybe it's a highboy table, maybe it's a buffet table, maybe it's the band technician table or a DJ table, but any linens that are used during a wedding, being set up, being used, or then, you know, being removed and packed up at the end of the night. If you've ever taken notice of that, you've probably not thought a whole lot about it beyond their purpose and just the simple logistics involved with the use of those linens. So, right, they need to be ordered, paid for, delivered, placed, hopefully pressed or steamed. It's a big one. Mm-hmm. Everyone should be pressing or steaming their linens. And then of course used during the wedding and then removed and returned to the supplier. So lots of effort, certainly, but pretty straightforward and pretty simple. But what none of us ever see when we place a linen order or we return a linen order after the wedding is done is the many, many, many pairs of hands and eyeballs and the brains and hearts involved in that linen operation and what it takes to get a linen in our hands to put on a table or to set a napkin down for someone to use to wipe their face. And so when we were at Nuage, we toured their warehouse, which I quite honestly felt like when they opened the doors, I was walking into heaven. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It was incredible. I mean, there's just, like, to paint a picture, you know, just shelves and shelves and shelves as far as your eye can see, like racks that are 30 feet high with these beautiful, exquisite linens hanging on them, bolts of fabric waiting to be used. When a replacement linen has to be made on short notice. And yeah, it's just an incredible operation. Some of the things that we saw that were so eye-opening, you know, we saw a sewing room where there are six women who spend literally every single day creating new product, repairing or restoring damaged product, churning out exquisite, expensive linens at a moment's notice to ensure that all of their clients, of which there are many thousands, have what they need to serve their own clients. Mm. And so this includes custom linens, as well as the pretty extensive, you know, line, the rental line they already carry, not to mention new collections that they release every year. So six women producing, I don't even know how many tens and tens and tens of thousands of linens. That's a question I need to ask, but six women. We saw the loading dock where bags, some days hundreds of them at a time, are loaded off UPS trucks onto this big floor to be checked in. And this is in Miami. And we were there in the early spring when it wasn't that hot out. But I want you to imagine in the heat of July or August in Miami, this big warehouse with a loading dock door that has to stay open so that deliveries can come in and out, and how hot and hard this work is. So those bags are all dropped off. They have to be checked in, emptied out, inventoried, processed. And I have to be honest, this was kind of a hard thing for Betsy and I to watch. We actually, while I was sort of filming it to capture all of this footage, Betsy joined in to sort of help do this process, unpack bags and count and inventory and sort. So linens come back with stains and tears and like melted candle wax all the time. I mean, on the regular. And they often come back full of food. Sometimes there are like knives in them. Sometimes there is vomit in them. I mean, it is gross. And it's really easy for us all to forget at the end of the night, at midnight, 1 a.m., when we are packing up linens, that a human being is going to open that bag and have to sort through everything in there in the heat of Miami on a loading dock, where they've got to get through hundreds of bags in a short amount of time. you know, I share this because if you are a member of a catering team or you're a planner or you're someone, you know, who you're used to just sort of scooping up that linen quickly from a table and dumping it into the bag that gets it, you know, is how it gets, they look like body bags often. Mm-hmm. That's how they get shipped back. Or if you're a planner who does that, you know, I want to encourage you to think about who's on the receiving end of that bag. Shake the linen out first. And there might be bits of food or flowers or whatever that fall into the floor. And yes, that means you have to sweep the floor. But if you skip that and you don't do that step, you are effectively shipping a biohazard across the country for one of the NUOSH staff members to have to open and deal with like 2 to 3 days later. Mm. And that's their reality every single day. And they do it without complaining in the most humble, selfless way. But it was just a hard thing to stomach, realizing there may have been a moment in the past where we bore some responsibility for someone having to deal with that mess. Yeah. So, you know, at NUOSH, they are running their gigantic laundry machines, basically, I think they said 23 hours a day, which obviously means multiple shifts of staff that come in and out to hand count each linen, sort them all, hand inspect each linen. It goes into the washing machine at least once, but often twice if it does not pass inspection. Then it gets dried before being hand fed by two, it takes two people to do this, into a large scale iron that presses the linen and gets all of the wrinkles out. And then it takes two people to fold each linen by hand, two more people to hand measure each linen to make sure it has not shrunk in that process or become like misshapen in any way. And then yet another person to hang and bag the linen before someone else can then get on the lift to hang them back on the racks, or perhaps someone else is working to package them in boxes to be delivered to the next customer. And none of that process even scratches the surface of like the sales process or all of the shipping logistics. Yeah. So, you know, we learned that NUOSH gets charged every time a linen order is not ready for a scheduled UPS pickup. So that means if we finish a wedding and we've got 20 bags of linens that need to go back and we don't have them ready when UPS shows up at our studio door to pick them up, NUOSH is going to get a bill for that. Mm. They're never going to pass that on to us because their customer service is incredibly amazing. But knowing that about them and understanding these mechanics at work and all of this process behind the scenes makes us want to be mm-hmm. the best partners we can, because it's hard to think about being in those shoes and dealing with literal, I don't think they would say this, but I'm going to say it. What we witnessed just feels like neglect, mm-hmm. right? On the part of the way some of their clients ship things back. You know, one thing that we saw that was just wild, we saw lots of wild things, but you know, a lot of clients of their clients frequently send back linens that are damaged beyond repair. And that happens. That's happened at our weddings. When that happens, the thing to do is to email them and let them know in advance, hey, here's what's coming back. Here's what happened. Mm-hmm. But somebody shipped back a linen while we were standing there that had been physically cut with scissors, like over a third of this table linen was just gone. And it was never mentioned. It was just put it in the bag to ship back. And so then what does that mean? Not only does that linen have to be replaced, but if it was needed for another order, the next client, meaning the next wedding, mm-hmm. suffers. Yeah. Either they get it late or they may not be able to get it at all. And so this really is a cycle that affects every single one of us when we're not good stewards of this rental product that has this very extensive process behind it, even though we just see, you know, like a piece of fabric when we're looking yeah. at it. And so, you know, we also learned that many of their clients, and so these might, you know, be planners, designers, venues, caterers, skip the proper ordering process and don't provide basic information needed to generate a proposal. So one quick example, while we were there, an event designer, and I don't know who it was, but somebody emailed a 40-page design deck to the sales rep. And it was clear that they were BCC'd on this email with probably the whole vendor team for the wedding. And the only request typed into the body of the email was, please look through this deck and send the appropriate order.
Oh no.
So let's think about what that means on, you know, the NUOSH side of things. So this client was expecting the NUOSH sales rep to look through 40 pages of a PowerPoint deck for which she is fully unfamiliar with this wedding, doesn't know the date of the wedding, doesn't know where the wedding is, doesn't know how many people are going to be there, doesn't know which product is intended to be theirs versus other rental companies. Because you could tell by looking, I mean, I roughly saw like a few pages and it's clear that not all of the inventory represented even belonged to Nuage. So they were expecting her to go through and figure all this out, count the number of tables on diagrams, try to figure out how many of those tables had Nuage linens versus someone else's, and then pull together an army to hours of work, and probably hours of work that still wouldn't result in a correct order.
Right.
That was so mind-blowing to me. I just had a hard time believing it was real, but apparently this happens all the time.
Wow.
So when we talk about balancing aesthetics and logistics, like what Betsy and I witnessed was an example of an incredible company that spends every moment of every day focused on that very balance. You know, we saw more than 20 people very hard at work that day who we will likely never interact with interpersonally again, mm-hmm. but who we absolutely depend on every bit as much as they depend on people like us. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just goes to demonstrate, you know, that this industry is so interconnected. When we think about our supply chains, we're not just thinking, you know, we can't just limit that to materials stuck on cargo ships or shipping delays from China or whatever it is that, you know, feels like we hear all the time. Our supply chains are dependent on expertise and human resources. So we have to cultivate and nurture and care for those resources as we recognize that, you know, our best laid plans to show up and serve our clients well will fall flat if we do not support the other professionals working alongside us to deliver the aesthetic and logistical balance that moves the needle.
Yeah, it just hits home on the message of the importance of communication, collaboration, mm-hmm. awareness, and mm-hmm. just, yeah, what a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
As we're wrapping on this topic, I'm wondering if there are a few, like, your gold standard tips for mm-hmm. successful industry collaborations that you could share with our listeners.
Yes, let's do it. Three tips. Mm-hmm. Three tips for successful industry partnerships across disciplines that help strike the balance of aesthetics and logistics. Number one is just do the research. I think this is certainly helpful if you're working in a new space or maybe with vendors you've never worked with before. Do some research to figure out what might make that collaboration more successful. And so, like, let's say you're a planner who's working with a new to you band, call other planners who've worked with them before. That would have saved us a lot of heartache if we had done that with that band that had the crazy mm-hmm. metal truss. We always do that now. But it's very simple. Do the research and you know the fit. Know when it's not going to be the right fit and don't be afraid to admit that. You don't have to book everything that comes your way. If your research tells you that it's not going to be a good fit for your business to collaborate with a certain vendor or a venue, then it's okay to pass on that job. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why research is so important. Number two is to never assume and always ask. Purple lights on the dance floor and gobo lights on a tent ceiling are totally preventable. They should have asked us about the aesthetics. We should have communicated better with them about it in advance.
Yeah.
We should have asked what they typically do on their stage set. I think we all have to check our blind spots.
Yes.
We have to figure out, like, what is it that we might be doing? This comes back to, like, rigidity.
Yes.
Word from before. Yes. What are we used to doing day in and day out that we think is great, but that might make somebody else's job harder or cast their work in a negative light? If you're a caterer who demands there be a bread and butter plate on the table every single time, just because that's what you do, it's worth considering that may really negatively impact the florist work, the event designer's work, because it competes with the limited, you know, real estate on the dinner table. Yeah. And again, that's not just a florist or designer trying to be difficult when they tell you that that's a problem. Your client hired that florist and that designer. So it's not okay to brush off those concerns. They're there to collaborate with you because aesthetics matters to the mm-hmm. client, not just that it matters to them.
Yeah, I love and that one.
Number three is to seek feedback and follow up. I mean, Betsy and I both, our whole team, like, we love it so much when any wedding professional, any vendor reaches out to follow up after we've completed a wedding, and even more so if they reach out to ask for feedback through the planning process. It shows us that, you know, they genuinely care about serving our mutual clients well. They care about having a relationship with us. They know how important that is to be a great partner, and it enables us all to do our very best work together. And, you know, that process of seeking feedback and asking for input and following up with each other after we've completed a project, that's how we learn about blind spots in our processes. That's how we learn, like, what's happening behind the scenes when we don't know what we don't know. What's happening in the Nuage warehouse? What's happening in the sewing room? What's happening in the kitchen? What's happening on, you know, the trailer full of band instruments and equipment that's coming from another state? That's how we become better at our work. That's how we become more appreciated for our work and more sought after in our shared industry.
I love all three of those very, very much. I am particularly drawn to number three, seeking feedback and following up. It's something that I talk about a fair amount in the Planner's Vault, in the membership, of the value of that in what you're going to learn about your processes and how that affects other people. And also, it's just, it's a huge component to building those long-term relationships with your vendor partners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it. Absolutely. Amazing. Well, Becca, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing some stories, for sharing some tips, and just your general insight and experience on this topic. I love it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
That was my friend Becca Atchison, and her websites are RebeccaRoseEvents.com and RREMethod.com. You can also connect with her on social media, where she's at RRoseEvents and at RREMethod. Okay, so I'd love to hear from you. How do you balance aesthetics and logistics so your clients and their guests can have a one-of-a-kind experience? You can post your thoughts in our Weddings for Real Facebook group. You'll find the link in the show notes, or on Instagram. And be sure to tag us. We're at Weddings for Real. That's all for today. As always, this episode is edited and produced by Earfluence and is brought to you by my online membership for wedding planners, The Planner's Vault. I'm Megan Gilligan, and we'll see you again soon on Weddings for Real.